The headlines: Yemenis take to the streets in nationwide rallies to mark the 7th anniversary of the Saudi-led war on their country. Iran says an agreement with its interlocutors over the removal of anti-Tehran sanctions is close, but there are a few important issues that need to be resolved. Plus, Qatar says no country can replace the Russian energy supplies after Ukraine urged energy-producing countries to boost their output to take the place of Russia's supplies. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Yemenis filled the streets in masses across the nation to mark the 7th anniversary of the Saudi-led war in their country. On the National Day of Resilience, protests were held in several cities, including Sada, Hajja, Ma'rib, and the capital, Sana'a. The demonstrators denounced the years-long Saudi aggression on Yemen. This after Saudi Arabia launched a series of attacks on Yemen in response to Friday's missile strikes by the Yemeni army. At least 8 people, including women and children, were killed in airstrikes by Saudi warplanes on residential areas in Sana'a. Several other provinces were also hit in similar strikes. The Yemeni strikes on Friday hit facilities of the Saudi state-run oil giant Aramco in Jeddah. Crucial sites in Riyadh were also targeted.
In response to the ongoing unjust siege on our country and our people, the Yemen Armed Forces underwent the third breaking siege operation through ballistic missiles and drones in the following manner. We targeted Aramco facilities in Jeddah and other locations in the capital of our Saudi enemy, Riyadh. The targeting of Ras Tanura and Rabigh refineries with a large number of drones. The targeting of Aramco in Jizan and Najran with a large number of drones. Targeting locations in Jizan and Dahran in the south, as well as Abha and Khams Mashit with ballistic missiles. The armed forces will continue to carry out attacks on important targets with the aim of breaking the siege.
Facilities belonging to the Saudi state oil company were also hit in Jizan and Najran in the south. The Yemeni army also says it launched drone attacks against oil refineries in the east of the kingdom. According to the army, multiple vital targets in several other locations, including in Abha, in the Asir region, have also been hit by ballistic missiles. The army says it will continue its retaliatory military operations until Riyadh stops its aggression and lifts its all-out siege on Yemen.
As the world's eyes are on the Russia-Ukraine conflict, the Saudi-led war in Yemen is still taking the lives of more civilians and pushing the country to the brink of famine. A recent UN report says 17.4 million Yemenis are food insecure, and the number is likely to go up to 19 million by the end of the year.
Unfortunately, the United Nations reports did not clarify the main reason for the deterioration of the humanitarian situation in Yemen, which is the blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia and its allies. The only solution to end the humanitarian crisis is to lift the siege and allow Yemenis to import food and medicine.
Back in 2015, Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a deadly war in Yemen to bring back to power former President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi. Hundreds of thousands of people, including women and the children, have lost their lives since then.
I was sitting in my house with my children in the evening, and suddenly a missile struck the next house. The explosion destroyed my house as well. We were so afraid.
Saudi warplanes targeted our neighborhood. This is a crime, and unfortunately, the world's watching in silence.
The Saudi war has impacted all aspects of civilian lives in Yemen, including the healthcare system, which is on the verge of collapse. This comes amid the ongoing fuel shortage, as Saudi Arabia keeps detaining Yemeni oil ships, despite the fact that the vessels have UN permits.
We suffer from a severe lack of fuel. We cannot operate medical devices without electricity, not to mention the lack of medicines and medical solutions. There is overcrowding in the medical centers. Unfortunately, the United Nations did not provide us with anything other than media statements. The international community must stop Saudi Arabia from seizing Yemeni oil ships.
Children are the most affected people by Saudi Arabia's war. The rate of child malnutrition is one of the highest in the world, and the situation continues to deteriorate.
More than 1 million children are suffering from malnutrition in Yemen, and I believe the number is greater than this. And we are coming to a worse period because we do not have the most basic needs necessary to save the lives of sick children, such as milk, solutions and medicines.
Observers say the years-long Saudi war in Yemen has only created the world's worst man-made humanitarian crisis. They say years of failure should be enough for Riyadh to start looking for other means to get rid of the quagmire it stuck with its war in Yemen. Al-Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Social media users have made comments on the 7th anniversary of the Yemen war, as well as the latest retaliatory attacks against Saudi Arabia. Let's listen to some of those comments in today's edition of Hashtag Trending.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here. As Yemen marks the 7th anniversary of the Saudi-led war against the country, the Yemeni army has launched several coordinated strikes against the Arab Kingdom. So let's review some of the events on the ground, as well as the reactions on social media in this edition of Hashtag Trending. The Yemeni army says it has conducted strikes on Aramco oil facilities in the strategic port city of Jeddah, and that their drones have conducted strikes on the Ras Tanura and Rabigh refineries. Crucial facilities in the capital Riyadh, Najran and Jizan also came under attack from Yemen. The Yemenis say that the strikes were a response to the continued Saudi aggression against their country and the crippling blockade imposed by the Saudi-led coalition. They say that such strikes will continue until the siege of Yemen is lifted. Our first comment of the day comes from H. Sumeri. The Yemeni army has announced ballistic missile and drone strikes on Riyadh, Jeddah, Jizan and Najran in Saudi Arabia. Vital infrastructure and oil facilities targeted as part of efforts by the Yemenis to end the Saudi blockade on Yemen. Check it out. Our next tweet comes from Asaf Bai. Yemeni resistance is stepping up retaliatory strikes deep inside Saudi Arabia for their acts of continuing aggression and siege of Yemen. Tim Anderson has our next tweet. Yemeni cruise missile strikes Saudi Aramco facility in Jeddah. The dirty war on Yemen is sustained by the whole world, minus Iran and Syria, pretending that an exile in Riyadh is president and the coalition government in Sana'a is just rebels or Houthis. Social media users believe that the Yemenis have every right to defend themselves against the Saudi-led aggression and blockade on the country that turned Yemen into the world's worst humanitarian crisis, and that's according to the UN. So here are some of those comments. Abbas said, it's the legitimate Yemeni response to 7 years of brutal aggression on Yemen. Saudis can't expect to keep bombing Yemeni cities and not receive a missile strike as retaliation. And even then, the Yemenis show their morals, even in war, where not a single casualty occurred. Ali Yemeni tweeted, in retaliation for over 7 years of Saudi aggression on the people of Yemen, the Saudis are also imposing a siege on all food, medicine, and oil. The Yemeni army has every right to retaliate and defend its people from this unjust war. The USA and UK are supporting the Saudis. And over here, we have a great example of something that the Saudis should know by now. What goes around comes around in this photo right here. A bombing in Sana'a in 2015 and a bombing in Saudi Arabia 2022. With this comment attached to it by Bil Awal, the Saudis started it first in Yemen and made it the worst famine-affected country. Yemen has been suffering for 7 years, and now it's time for retaliation. If Saudi Arabia wants to be saved, it needs to get the hell out of Yemen and stop bombarding it. Meanwhile, voices are rising against Formula One authorities who plan to hold the race in a country that is accused of committing war crimes against Yemen. They say that Riyadh has spent millions upon millions of dollars on lobbyists in the United States to whitewash the war on Yemen. And here's our final batch of comments for today. The next tweet comes from @WarPowersReform. March 26th marks the 7th anniversary of the disastrous war in Yemen, which has resulted in almost 500,000 deaths. The Saudis have spent more than $100 million on lobbyists and public relations specialists in the U.S. to whitewash the war. Thank you. Time to get back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
Fra Hughes, an author and journalist, joined us earlier to explain why Western media do not make the same effort to cover the war in Yemen as they do with Ukraine. He believes the West's imperialistic motives are the main reason.
They're totally ignoring what is happening in Yemen because it doesn't suit Western imperialist hegemonic designs within the region. So bombing Yemen by Saudi Arabia is forgotten about until there are retaliatory strikes, and then Yemen is perceived in the West as being the aggressor and Saudi Arabia the victim. And exactly the same thing is happening in Ukraine, and that Russia then is who are defending themselves or seem to be the aggressors, and the Ukrainians are seen to be the victims. So what we have also is this white, racist, supremacist, Western Christian, dare I say it, ideology, where the lives of people in the Middle East count for nothing and they're allowed to drown in the Mediterranean Sea because they were refused safe passage as refugees to Great Britain and to Western Europe via Greece and countries like Turkey. Whereas Ukraine, which has neo-Nazis in the government, has been supported by the West since the breakup of the Soviet Union, since the Colour Revolution of 2004, since the coup, the fascist coup inspired by America in 2014. These are white, blue-eyed people who are welcomed across Western imperialist Europe as refugees, and Russia is demonized as the people causing all the aggression. So what we have are two separate wars and two separate theaters of conflict that both basically have the same ingredients, which is America and NATO imperialism versus anyone who resists their unipolar world order that has the former white European racist countries as the vanguard to Christian values and to capitalism, which they want to spread across the world.
Iran's foreign minister says resuming talks to remove sanctions against his country remains on the government's agenda. Hossein Amir Abdollahian was speaking in a televised interview with IRIB. He said the key outstanding issues need to be resolved before an agreement could be reached in Vienna. The Iranian minister said that any possible outcome will not go beyond the framework of the 2015 deal, known as the JCPOA. The comments come as the European Union's coordinator for the talks, Enrique Mora, is set to visit Tehran on Saturday to settle the unresolved issues. Iran says it is ready for a good deal if Washington removes the sanctions in a verifiable manner. Tehran demands guarantees that there will be no more withdrawal by the U.S. from a deal as it did in 2018. Iran has rejected as illegal a decision by Kuwait and Saudi Arabia to produce gas at a Persian Gulf field shared by the three countries, saying that it reserves the right for drilling in Arash gas field. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says, based on international regulations, any decision to tap Arash field has to be discussed with all parties, including Tehran. He said the agreement is illegal and in contrast to previous negotiations. Khatibzadeh noted that the gas field is a joint field between Iran, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, while parts of it are located in areas between Iran and Kuwait whose water boundaries have not been defined. Earlier, the two Arab countries signed a deal to ramp up the output of gas reserves, ignoring Iran's right in the Persian Gulf area. It's day 31 of Russia's military campaign in its western neighbor. Let's take a look at the latest developments of the conflict. Russian forces have taken control of a town where the defunct Chernobyl nuclear plant's workers live. That's according to the governor of Kyiv region. Elsewhere in the country, the port city of Mariupol continues to grab the headlines as its mayor says the situation there remains critical. The mayor says street fighting goes on in the city center. In western Ukraine, three powerful explosions have been reported in the Lviv region. Authorities have called on residents to take shelter amid an air raid warning. Meanwhile, Moscow says it has launched a missile attack against a military target in eastern Ukraine. That a day after Russia said it has accomplished its objectives in the first phase of the Ukraine operation. In this case, we have a missile attack on a military target in East Ukraine using the Caliber cruise missiles. Meanwhile, Kyiv says it has reached an agreement with Moscow to set up 10 humanitarian corridors to evacuate civilians from battle zones. It says over 100,000 people still need to be evacuated from the besieged city of Mariupol. Meanwhile, in Poland's capital, the U.S. President Joe Biden has met with a number of Ukrainian officials, including the foreign and defense ministers. Russia's ongoing campaign in Ukraine has raised concerns over energy supplies across Europe. But Tars says no one can replace Russian gas exports immediately, as the EU is seeking to diversify away from Russia towards other suppliers.
I don't think we can help, and nobody can replace. I've said this very clearly. The volume that we're talking about, 30 to 40% of gas coming from Russia to Europe, is not something that can be replaced overnight. It needs time.
The Qatari official was addressing the Doha Forum. His comments came one day after the U.S. signed a deal to supply 15 billion cubic meters of liquefied natural gas to the EU this year. Saad Sherida Al-Kabi said providing such a large volume would take nearly 7 years. Earlier on Saturday, Ukraine's president also addressed the Doha Forum. Volodymyr Zelensky called on energy-producing countries to ramp up output to help the EU wean itself off Russian supplies.
I ask you to increase the output of energy to ensure that everyone in Russia understands that, that no country can use energy as a weapon and blackmail, to blackmail the world.
The Ukrainian president said energy-producing countries like Qatar could contribute to Europe's stability. Russia is the EU's number one energy supplier. The bloc imports nearly 40% of its natural gas and over a quarter of its oil from the country. The European Union aims to ramp down its gas dependency by two-thirds this year. That comes as energy prices have already soared in Europe due to the Ukraine conflict and Western sanctions on Russia's energy sector. Moscow's demand for gas payments in rubles has added to concerns of an energy supply squeeze and leading to even higher prices. With just 2 weeks ahead of the first round of the presidential election in France, people have come to the streets of the capital, Paris, in yet another protest against the government. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the ethical features of dining table. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the ethical features of dining table. And today we will talk about one of these features, which is chewing food, chewing more food while you're eating. And this is ethical that when you eat something, you must chew it enough so that it is distributed into small pieces. It is crushed into small pieces. And once you do that, it is easier for the stomach to digest it. Now, unfortunately, we see that there are many people who chew less and they just eat things without chewing, or they chew for less time. And later, they have other issues. They maybe have the cholesterol, they may have the digestion issues, and they may have other issues as well. So, and they make it hard for the stomach to digest it. Now, in the Islamic lifestyle, it is recommended, it is highly recommended, and it is said to pay attention to this ethical point that when you are eating, you must eat and you need to take small bites, and after that you must chew it enough so that you're not getting sick after eating something, so that you're safe from being sick, from being ill after eating something. So it is recommended to chew more and more while you eat. According to some narrations, a person must chew a bite or morsel that he has for 40 times. Some of them have said 22 times, but the recommended is 40 times, so that it is being chewed well, and now it's easier for the digestive system to digest it, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the ethical features of dining table, and we were talking about the feature of chewing the food. It is said and it is recommended in the Islamic, when we talk about the Islamic lifestyle, in the Islamic lifestyle, according to the Islamic teachings, to chew more when you're eating and to chew enough so that the food that you have, it is being crushed into small pieces. Obviously, we have these teeth to crush the things that we eat. We take bites. And on the other hand, it lengthens the time of eating something. And in the Islamic lifestyle, there is a lot of emphasis on making a long time or spending more time in eating. Like when you're on the dining table, don't rush to finish the food. Give enough time and spend a proper time for eating. Do not rush. And therefore, we can also see that according to the Islamic teachings, therefore, they do not recommend in Islamic teachings these fast foods that we have to eat in 5 minutes and go. The things that are not cooked properly, and we are trying to just eat them in the same way. For example, it is cooked in 3 minutes and you're trying to eat it in 3 minutes. This will definitely bring harm to our body, these things. So we need to save ourselves. And because it is recommended to say take small morsels and obviously chew more, therefore it lengthens the time that we are spending on the dining table. And it is from the ethics of the Islam. And on the other hand, we have this narration which says, أَطِيلُ الْجُلُوسَ عِنْدَ الْمَوَائِدِ. Lengthen your time when you're sitting on the dining table to eat. فَإِنَّهَا, therefore, this thing, أَوْقَاتُ فَإِنَّهَا, because this sitting, these timings, لَا تُحْسَبُ مِنْ أَعْمَارِكُمْ. These are not calculated in your age. Therefore, if the age you want to lengthen your time of living, pay a proper time on the dining table, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of events making headlines in Africa. Now, this week, we are focusing on the diplomatic ties between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Republic of Kenya. These two great nations have enjoyed cordial ties that have continued to improve over the years. To discuss this, we are joined by two special guests. In the studio here, we have His Excellency Joshua Getimu, the ambassador of the Republic of Kenya to Iran, and joining us via video link is His Excellency Jafar Barmaki, the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Kenya. Stay with us till the end of the program. And as I told you earlier, here in our studio in Tehran, we have His Excellency Joshua Getimu, the ambassador of the Republic of Kenya to Iran. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you, Barak, for this opportunity.
And joining us from Kenya via video link is His Excellency Jafar Barmaki, the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Kenya. Thank you very much, Ambassador Jafar Barmaki, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for it, David. Invitation.
And now, before we proceed with our discussion, let's listen to a brief introduction of our subject today.
This year marks 50 years since the establishment of diplomatic ties between Iran and Kenya. These ties witnessed tremendous progress following the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. These two countries enjoy historical ties that continue to thrive to the present times. Kenya and Iran are both strategically located and enjoy diverse markets. This creates immense potential for cooperation when it comes to complementing each other's requirements in imports and export arenas.
Now, let's start with you here in the studio, Ambassador Joshua Gatimu. Now, can you briefly elaborate to us on the current level of ties between Kenya and Iran?
Thank you, Mubarak. And what I can see is that the two countries, Kenya and Iran, have enjoyed warm and cordial relations within the framework of the Kenya-Iran Joint Commission for Cooperation, JCC, of 2014. And further, the two countries have concluded several agreements and a memorandum of understanding. Mm-hmm. Some of them include, for example, the Official Development Assistance, ODA, credit line facility, and agricultural cooperation. Mm-hmm. Though we have done this, there is more we can do to review the signed agreements and MOUs between the two countries, as many of them remain pending. Some have lapsed, and we hope that come June this year, we will be holding the 7th Kenya-Iran Joint Commission for Cooperation. In Nairobi, in Kenya, we will be hosting.
Yeah.
That will enrich our bilateral relationship further.
Now, to you, Ambassador Barmaki, can you also briefly elaborate now on the historical aspect of ties between Kenya and Iran?
Yeah, Mubarak, you may know very well that the Iranian travel to this part of the world, I mean East Africa, especially through Mombasa almost four centuries ago, when they appeared to be here along with Omanis to help the local people of Mombasa to get rid of the oppression of the Portuguese who were here for some decades. Therefore, it was almost 1662 that the Iranian visited this part of the world and helped the local people in overcoming the operations from the big powers at that time. And the second, in fact, migration from the Iranian was in 1820, which again the Baluchi from Iran migrated here, and they helped a lot in developing the coastal area of Kenya.
Thank you very much for that insight. Now, Ambassador Joshua Gatimu, what is the importance of the economic and trade ties between the two countries, and where are we moving to right now?
Thank you, Barak. I think as we have heard from my colleague in Kenya, trade relations between the two countries started a long time ago.
Yeah.
With the Iranians, at that time called Persians, Oman Arabs, coming to our coastal towns for business.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that has been going on for a long time. And as years passed on, we have continued with the same trade between the two countries.
Yeah.
And most of the commodities traded in, for example, from our country, you find that we are tea ranks among the most important one. Then coffee, and of late I think there is special liking for coffee in Iran amongst the youth, and we are noting that, and also horticultural products to this country. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think it is good to emphasize that though it has been minimal for some years because of sanctions on Iran, which we hope they will come to an end quite soon, we are still determined to continue with the trade between the two countries.
Mm-hmm.
And from here, I can tell you, we have been getting a lot of petroleum products from Iran.
Yeah.
And I can also say that we have many Iranian business people in Kenya, with doing big business. So we are connected economically with Iran.
Now, back to you, Ambassador Barmaki. Now, following the victory of the Islamic Revolution, what are some of the milestones which have been achieved in the Kenya-Iran ties?
If I want to refer to the milestones in the relations, I can refer to the visit of the high levels at the presidential level between two countries that helped a lot in expanding the relations, not only at the presidential level, but also at the ministerial and the vice president level. This is one part which is mostly political, but I can refer to one of the activities of our embassy here in Nairobi that refers to 1 year back, which is establishing and putting up the Iran House of Innovation and Technology in Nairobi, which is a very good help to the startups and on those companies who are knowledge-based in Kenya and in Iraq. That House of Innovation and Technology is of the Iranian knowledge. They are ready to present technologies to the Kenyan market. This house, which we call Aviation IH, ready to, and at the moment is doing the Kenyan startups in come up with new ideas to commercialize and also finance to send it to the market. These are in political and in economic aspects that I can refer to between two countries. But we are still looking for lots of activities to do, and I hope in coming year I can have good news for you in expanding the relations between two countries that you can consider as milestones in the relations.
Thank you very much for that. Now, Ambassador Getimu, here in Tehran, since you arrived and started your mission, what steps have you taken to, you know, boost the trade and economic ties between Kenya and Iran?
Thank you, Mubarak, for that question. And since my arrival here, almost 1 year ago now, I think in April 13th, I will be 1 year in Tehran.
Oh, wonderful.
And since my arrival here, there have been delegations and delegations from Nairobi of business people. Thanks to my colleague in Nairobi for the support. They have been coming here to look for business opportunities. And I can tell you, during this period, we have had two very important meetings, two in Nairobi, for example, last year. And another one recently in Naivasha, whereby we had a virtual meeting with the people, business people from Iran, some attending the meeting. And really, Kenyans are anxious. They are ready to go to explore what they can get from here and what they can bring to this part of the world.
Oh, so we look forward to a great future in terms of trade.
We look forward to a great interaction as far as business and other activities are concerned.
Now, Ambassador Barmaki, away from business and economic issues, now, what are some of the humanitarian projects and development projects Iran is implementing in Kenya?
If I go back to the records, I can tell you that most of the these developmental and humanitarian assistance to Kenya was belonging before 2015, that according to the records, there were several projects in different parts of the country which amounted to more than $5 million that we financed different projects for different parts, especially the remote areas, on different issues like on water, sanitations, on building schools, and some other matters that were very necessary for that part of the country.
Now, we'll take a short break, viewers, and when we come back, we shall continue our discussion on the Kenya-Iran ties. Stay with us.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back to Africa Today. We have a special program today on the diplomatic ties between Kenya and Iran, which are marking 50 years since their inception. Now, in the studio here, we have Ambassador Joshua Getimu, the ambassador of the Republic of Kenya to Iran, and also joining us by a video link from Kenya is His Excellency Jafar Barmaki, the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Kenya. Now, Ambassador Getimu, as you mentioned earlier, it's almost 1 year since you arrived in Iran. Can you tell us how did you find the country and what has been your experience over the last few months here?
Thank you, Mubarak. And I will be very honest in this one. Apart from what I was read in history a long time ago about the Persian Gulf, you know, the conquerors and so forth.
Yeah.
Before I came here, the information about Iran is out there normally is not the correct one.
Yeah.
So I remember some people would ask us, and my family and my spouse when we were coming.
Yeah.
You people aren't you afraid of that place?
Uh-huh.
Because people think that Iran, especially Tehran, is very insecure.
Yeah.
Because of the propaganda.
The propaganda, yeah, Western media, yes. Propaganda, yeah.
But when we arrived here and looked around, mm-hmm. The streets and everything, to me it looked like any other street in Europe.
Oh, great.
Those old streets, you know, with the cabros, tiles and so forth.
Yeah.
And a very civilized people.
Yeah.
People looking, who look like, in fact, Western people from the Western world.
Yeah.
So, my earlier
perception. Yeah.
Changed. And I've come to find out that the Iranians are very good with people.
Yeah.
Very kind.
Yeah.
And they are working.
Oh, and great to know that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe in our country, because we are also hardworking, maybe we borrow some few traits from these parts of the world.
Yeah.
So it's a country to be in, and with their long history, because they have a long history.
Yeah.
There is a lot we can learn from this country. In matters of technology, for example.
Yeah.
And new methods, even, you know, we are an agricultural state.
Yeah.
Country. We can learn a lot about agriculture from here.
Yeah.
And as I said about business and so forth, it's really a country that I really intend to build up the relations for the betterment of the people of the two countries.
Thank you. Now, Ambassador Barmaki, as you noted earlier, the historical ties between Kenya and Iran, or actually Iran and the whole of East Africa, have been there for hundreds of years. Now, what is being done to sustain these people-to-people relations between the two nations?
If I look at the activities of the embassy we have done in different areas, with especially in last 1 year, I can tell you that the coordination between two embassies, I mean the Kenyan embassy in Tehran and the Iranian embassy, they had very good relations that rarely can find in the previous relations between two embassies.
Yeah.
And we were very successful in supporting each other. As His Excellency Gatimu referred to, it was for the first time in our relation that in last 1 year, we had 11 delegations exchanged between two countries.
Ambassador Barmaki, our last question to you. Now, recently, there was a United Nations Environment Assembly held in Nairobi, and which voted to end plastic pollution. Can you tell us about the assembly and Iran's participation in this important global summit?
Yeah, thank you, Mubarak. Let me give some introduction on what I do here beside ambassadorial level to Kenya and bilateral. I am also the permanent representative of Iran to United Nations office in Nairobi.
Yeah.
Maybe the audience doesn't know that we have two specialized agencies of the United Nations here, which called United Nations Environment Program and United Nations Human Settlement.
Yeah.
These two are headquarters are in Nairobi, and the only headquarters of the United Nations in a developing country. And this is why Kenya is also very important, Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
In that area, this year we had the United Nations Environment Assembly, the fifth session here, which held every 2 years. And one of the important resolutions which has been adopted was on plastic pollution. And Iran was the co-sponsor, along with the other countries, on this resolution. We succeeded to adopt this resolution in UNIA. And it is going to be to put up an international negotiating committee in 2022 to start preparing a text as a new multilateral environmental agreement on plastic pollution, the whole life of plastic production, from designing to disposal. And it is very important, and although it is very difficult, but we hope that by 2024 we are in a situation to conclude and to adopt the text as a new MEA. And Iran also has been elected from the regional group, Asia regional group, as the vice president to next session of UNIA, and that can help a lot in conducting the negotiation on plastic pollution resolution, which is going to be in next 2 years. Therefore, Iran can play a good role in that, because we have the same position as the vice president for next 2 years in the Bureau of UNIA 6, United Nations Environment Assembly 6th.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Jafar Barmaki, for your time. It's been really great having you. And we hope to have more such conversations in future on the ties between these two great nations.
Can I add something, Mubarak, if you have time?
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I am in Mombasa now. I'm here to open the Baluch Museum, one of the embassy activity in the 50th anniversary of the diplomatic relations between two countries.
Yeah.
In this day afternoon, we are going to open Baluchi Museum, which has been put up in very close collaboration with the Baluchi community in Mombasa and the Iranian embassy in Nairobi. And I hope that I can send you some short video clips from the opening so you can add to your program.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Your Excellency. Ambassador Joshua Getimbu, before we wind up, now, where do you see the Iran-Kenya ties in the next 4 years before the end of your mission?
To be frank, Mubarak, I expect to see more interaction between the political leadership at the top, the business people between the two countries and ordinary Kenyans. Those are my expectations.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, Ambassador Joshua Getimbu, for your time and for accepting our invitation.
Thank you very much, Mubarak.
Well, and that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's been great having you. Drop us a line through our social media handle and let us know your opinion. Goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.